on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Bruni, and joining me today is Shay Dixon. Shay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. A dub. The board is not melting. I'm keeping an eye on it as we record the podcast after the game. But look, you'll take it. You went up there. Yep. You got to win at 11 a.m. It ends up being a little sloppy on the back end in the fourth quarter. We'll break it all down. But I know LSU fans. I've been around them forever. Right now, they're feeling like, well, you can't just keep doing this forever. It'll burn you. You're 1,000,000% correct. But it did not burn you today, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, basically, we're going to recap the game, then give our overall takeaways and just what we think can be kind of pulled from this game moving forward through SEC play. But you're right. I mean, they started off SEC competition with a win on the road, and that's really all you can ask for against Mississippi State. And I was skeptical coming into the game. I wasn't sure exactly how it would play out, but because I've been wrong so many times this season, I was wrong against UCLA. I was pretty much wrong against McNeese, and I was wrong last week against Central Michigan, where I said Central Michigan would give them trouble. But this week, I was right for once, and I predicted 30-26 final. I said LSU defense would pretty much control the game, and that Mississippi State's defense would also have a really good outing and give LSU some trouble. And, you know, Mississippi State tacked on a couple late touchdowns to make it a closer game than I think it was, but still the defenses dominated the game. And right from the start, where Mississippi State's first drive, they go work their way into LSU territory, and the fumble forced by Cordell Flott, and Damone Clark picks it up and returns it to, I think, the 35. And then Max Johnson and company end up taking it in for 7. That kind of set the tone of the game. And I think that play specifically, I think it was the biggest play of the game, and it happened on the first drive.
Yeah, and you look at the overall plan, too, of they went into this game, and we saw it play out across the first half. They were going to do the exact opposite of what Bo Pelini did against Mississippi State a year ago. They weren't going to sit in man all day. They were going to sit back, rush 3, drop 8, keep everything in front of them. We talked about this all week on the site, the podcast. I mean, Coach O even made it clear in his interviews this week that the goal, eye discipline, technique, being in the right spot, keeping everyone in front of you. LSU was going to come into this game and just sit back and let Will Rogers dink and dunk around as much as they wanted to, but basically daring Mike Leach to run. And when Mike Leach ran the ball, they had some success. He just wouldn't stick with it. They would have a few runs and then, okay, let's throw it. And now Cordell Flott has picked you off and gotten a second turnover, which I think you look at what LSU was able to do in the first half. Yes, it was 7-3 at half. You're wondering about what's going on with the offense, what's happening. They come out and get some explosive plays in the second half. We'll talk a little bit about that. But overall, I think that the game plan coming in defensively is one where Durante Jones 1, Mike Leach 0, because Leach never really adjusted to what would have hurt LSU, which was just trying to run the football, keep running it, make LSU go back to 4-down linemen, make them come up with guys in the box. They never brought that with any real consistency. And by the time you look up, it's the fourth quarter. At the end of the third quarter, they scored for the first time. So nothing was really working well for MSU offensively across those first three quarters. And that's kudos to Durante Jones's game plan. That's kudos to the defense executing, and a big shout out to the defensive backs. And I could go up and down the list. Like guys like Cam Lewis had a good game today. Mm-hmm. Not to mention McGluthern, Ricks, all these guys. We've talked about Flott. He had 2 turnovers, played a part in 2 turnovers. He looked great, but they tackled Jay Ward's back. Major Burns had a good game. They all tackled really, really well. And that's something you've got to be able to do against a team like this that runs the air raid, especially if you're just trying to keep everything in front of you and trying to basically say, okay, dump it off for 5 yards. We'll just make the stop, and you'll have to do it again and again and again. I thought it was a great strategy for LSU. I thought they executed it well. O will be pissed off. He'll be upset about how the fourth quarter played out, because all of a sudden you've been gashed a couple of times and a wheel route gets you and a busted coverage gets you, and you're looking up and having to recover an onside kick at the end of the game just to hold on. That's not what you want. But overall, the defensive effort is what they were looking for.
And I really couldn't believe that Mike Leach – well, I could believe it, that they didn't run the ball at all. But it was just – at the end of the day, they continued to gash LSU consistently on the ground and really set up things in their passing game off of it. But LSU was fine with it. LSU didn't care. LSU was watching that unfold, and they were like, all right, fine. We know that you don't want – whenever you play someone – and you know that they don't want to do that, it just makes life easy. And so that's what we saw against Memphis, against when Mississippi State played them, against Louisiana Tech when they played them. There was just – it's too easy. And so when you take that step up in competition, which LSU is compared to Memphis, you have to be a little bit more dynamic. You have to be a little bit more versatile. And I know this is what Mike Leach does, but – you know, Washington State and a lot of other places he's been, he might have had a little bit more superior talent, but you don't have superior talent at Mississippi State. And LSU, to give them an easy game plan to follow, like not make it difficult at all, they didn't have to really change up their coverages at all. It was pretty much the same thing every single play. To just let the defense be comfortable consistently just really was underwhelming, unimpressive, and if I was a Mississippi State fan, I'd be pretty upset right now. So,
oh man, think about that too. LSU wins this, Matthew, by 3 points in a game that they controlled for most of it, and then it gets tight at the end. If you're a Mississippi State fan, you're furious. You've turned the ball over twice right out of the gates and give away points. You miss a wide open touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone. You have a terrible special teams personal foul snafu where you know you can't jump over the shield guys and you have a special teams player go and do it when you had just gotten a stop down 11 or what it was that could have helped them swing the game. Then you get in just to the bitter end of the game where you fought yourself all the way back. You've clawed back in it and he's burning a timeout when LSU is about to kneel out the clock and give it back to you at least for a couple of Hail Mary chunks on a play you knew wasn't getting reversed. I think Mike Leach had a little bit of last week's referee snafus in his mind about what was happening on a special teams play at the end and whether it needed to be reviewed. And he took the final timeout off the board. It gave Mississippi State no chance at the end. It's an LSU podcast, but boy, I don't even, or maybe I do. I should venture over to the MSU 24/7 board
today. I thought
about
that.
Because I guarantee they're melting. Not that I think that LSU won the football game, but State shot themselves in the foot again and again. I mean, I didn't even talk about LSU's touchdowns. One, Trey Palmer is walking backwards from the 10-yard line because nobody covered him. Yeah, and then at the end of the game, the final one, you get caught on a third and long crossing route where two guys run into each other. Hopefully the one guy's okay, but basically knocked each other out. And Cole Taylor, who is not any sort of threat in the passing game, is walking in from 40 yards out. For LSU, you love explosive plays. You aren't getting all of that every week. Like, that's like the perfectly bad storm for Mississippi State. I would be frustrated if I were a Bulldogs fan today.
Yeah. And Mississippi State had 205 yards in the first half. I mean, they had, and you have the two turnovers in LSU territory.
No point, or 3 points, no touchdowns.
Yeah. 3 points, no touchdowns. It was a performance that I think Mississippi State missed, and even the touchdown to Boutte on the RPO, which I thought was great design and everything, it was still catching Mississippi State being too aggressive, committing to the run when I think in the first half and for a lot of the early part of the game, Mississippi State played LSU the right way. You want to make them try to run the ball. You want to make them try to, you know, take the short stuff underneath and not give them any explosive plays, because this LSU offense is really – it's inconsistent, but if you give them the explosive plays, they're really good enough to take it and really good enough to make to hurt you with it. And that's what I think Mississippi State kind of – I think they got antsy, and they just tried making plays on the defense side of the ball, and that gave up, you know, the touchdowns. And they were caught in man a few times, like on the Cole Taylor touchdown. And you just can't do that against this LSU team that has the weapons that are capable of beating you. The offensive line is probably not capable of beating you. The run game, not really. But these weapons can.
Yeah, and you look to, you know what you're going to get. If you need explosive plays, we've heard Orgeron say it from even before the season started when I keep going back to it because I think it's so true now that he said, well, how do you settle Max in against UCLA on the road? He said, just throw it. Find number one. Throw it to Kayshawn. Just that will settle you in. And I think there was a point in this game where I think whenever, right after he had his second touchdown catch, he was on 23 catches on the year for 8 touchdowns, which is 8's the most in the NCAA right now. So he is your dynamic, no doubt, playmaker. And we saw today, look, Deion Smith can have a hell of a game a week ago. He can come out today and drop a bunch of passes. You can have Brian Thomas drop a bunch of passes, come out today and look like your third receiver. You know, you can have Dre Jenkins not even play and then come out and make a couple good plays in this game. You get a guy like Trey Palmer, who just has one target on the whole day and he scores a touchdown for you. Jack Besh, kind of curiously in and out of the lineup, or was it in the game on a lot of like third downs, some critical plays. I know it's all package based with whatever personnel they're in, or kind of the feel for the game at the moment, or down in distance, but he's a guy you just got to have out there almost at all times. Like if you want Cole Taylor blocking, then put Besh at receiver. I think that's kind of one thing I would point to is you want him on the field a little bit more often. But my point in saying all of that is that the one constant will be Butte. And once again, give him the ball. He'll do the rest for you. He's special, man. And with an offense that has no run game and the other team knows you're passing it and knows you have the best receiver in America on your team and want to give him the ball, they still can't stop him.
Yeah. It was an inconsistent game from Max Johnson, but he did, I think, what he had to do. I think he put the ball where it needed to go, especially on those touchdown passes, especially the first one. The first one was the best play of the season, I think, on his part. Like, that was a really good job stepping up in the pocket against pressure and delivering a strike to Butte in the end zone. So
that was a great play.
Yeah, I'm really confident that he's taking steps forward. He's just not quite there yet.
Look at Matthew coming around on Max Johnson.
He's not quite there yet, but he's taking steps forward. That's what I will say.
So. Let me ask you this. How much better of a quarterback, or how much better would you feel about Max Johnson as your quarterback if you could actually run the football?
So much better. So much better. But the thing is they can't run the ball. So now it's like he can't just,
he's got to be perfect, really.
Yeah. Yeah. He can't just be okay, right? He has to be good in a lot of situations where he shouldn't have to be good every single time. But this offense needs him to be good every single time. And I the only reason I can't completely give him, you know, the bail, the benefit of the doubt is because I think these receivers are good enough, especially through against the four defenses that they've played so far, is that these receivers should be able to and are getting separation and, you know, making plays on the outside. So that helps them out a little bit. And once the difficulty of competition starts stepping up, he's going to have to, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on his shoulders here, and that's what I'm kind of worried about. But what do you think about the offense just as a whole, you know, take away from this game, just how would you evaluate it?
I said, and look, I'm a little bit higher on Max than most. I thought he played well today. And look, at the end of the day, he's 3-0 in SEC starts, two of them being road games at Florida and Mississippi State, one being a shootout with Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. So whatever sort of setting you put him in these SEC road games, he's delivered for you. Now, again, like I said, I'm someone who's high on Max. I think that he's 30th on the list of things that I would say are hiccups for this team in different spots, when you're saying from coaching to players to play calling to whatever it might be. But I said this in my quick takeaways, and I sort of still feel that way now that I've had, you know, an hour or so to digest it. I don't know anything more about this offense than I knew before the game started. I already knew their O-line wasn't that good. I already knew the O-line could not develop a run game. I knew how the running backs looked. I knew that the receivers are talented, but beyond Butte, you've got a combo of young guys who can go from the high of highs a week ago to dropping balls this week. Like, I get all that. I knew how Max would play. I was a bit, and I guess now I'm still the same on Jake Peach, because I still really don't have a great grip yet on maybe what he really wants to do, what he thinks would be the best thing for this offense, because they didn't go tempo really at all today. And tempo was the one thing that made them look great a week ago. Now, are you not going tempo because you got up a little bit, you don't want to be in a shootout with State, or is it, you know, does it play into knowing you're facing an air raid? Maybe, I don't know. I'm not in the offensive room and drawing up the game plan, but I do think that moving forward, if they're just not going to have a run game and really not going to try to have one, I mean, they ran for 60 yards today. That's 2 yards a carry, which is their average for the year. That's terrible. That's awful. So you're getting to the point now, an SEC game in, four games in, a month into the season, about to be in week five. Like, how much longer can you chase the ghost of a run game before we just think and understand that this is just what LSU is going to be, a team that is passing the ball a lot, is passing to set up the run, and maybe really just needs to find a run game in situational spots, and is probably going to have to lean on this RPO even more and more as time goes on, because that could be one way that they are able to get a little something going. But I don't know. There's nothing about the offense that I learned today that I didn't already know.
I mean, the interception Max Johnson did throw, and there were a couple of those shots down the field that I thought he maybe thought he could get away with because they worked against Central Michigan and McNeese State. Those are ones that I think he's going to have to learn from, just to kind of wrap up my Max Johnson thought. Just he can move the ball down the field, but you have to know your personnel, and you have to know – I wouldn't mind a jump ball to Jack Besh, but in different situations, whether it's Trey Palmer or maybe a little shorter receivers, he has to just be smart in those situations and take what the defense gives him. But you could tell he's starting to at least be more aggressive, which he was not in the first two games. So I don't mind those plays. How much are we concerned that Mississippi State is just awful?
Well, I'm not sure that McNeese or Central Michigan or State – are all that good, and we'll see maybe long-term how good UCLA is. LSU's really not that great, right? I mean, we know that. They have glaring issues. I think defensively we're starting to feel a little bit better about where they are, especially considered Andre Anthony's out, Derek Stingley's out. You're seeing other guys still step up. So that's a positive. And I think that we've seen Durante Jones grow some here in the first 3 to 4 weeks as a defensive coordinator. Today was probably, by and large, the best they played. I know the McNeese game is – shut them out or what, they scored seven, but it's McNeese. This was a game where most LSU fans probably thought LSU's not going to look that great on defense. They'll end up not being able to stop the air raid again. And that was just not the case. And they stuck to their philosophy. Even when State was banging out 3, 4, 5, 6 yard run plays. And even in the pass game, little 4 or 5 yard chunks that are really just an extension of your running game. As you said, LSU didn't care. Do it. Yep. Keep doing it and doing it. Either you'll make a mistake, we'll force a fumble, we'll get a pick, whatever it might be, or you're going to go back to stubbornly throwing it and you'll eventually just have to punt the football. And they missed a field goal. I mean, there was a lot of things that went wrong for them, but I really thought that I think better about the defense right now moving forward, especially knowing that arguably two of their best players are just not playing anymore. And we'll see how long Stingley's out for. Tougher times are ahead, but Auburn don't look like all that right now, losing to Georgia State out there in the first half. And
Georgia State just scored again, too. Yeah, they're 24-12.
And then we've got, what, Chattanooga was nearly pulled off an upset on Kentucky. So that's next two games, Matt.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about this defense is my first takeaway was like, okay, how much can I really pull from this performance? Because I don't know how much they're going to use, obviously, a three-man front moving forward, right? I think it's mostly going to be a four-man front here with Ed Orgeron and Durante Jones. So I was like, okay, how much can I take away from this? But then as the game continued to unfold and I continued watching it, it showed that, A, they're a lot more comfortable in zone, which is a big step forward, a huge step forward, especially without Stingley now. And B, I think it just shows that they're comfortable being versatile and they're not scared to be versatile in different ways and to play to their competition, to do what has to be done in order to win games. And I think that's a big step forward for this defense in that it's not just going to be like last year or even like this year against, you know, McNeese and Central Michigan and UCLA, where it was like, this is our defense. This is what we're going to run. We're going to do this. And that was a thing that through three games I was concerned about. I was like, can they be versatile and how are they going to match up against these unique offenses of Mississippi State and Florida and, Alabama and Kentucky and whatnot? How are they going to change to the personnel of the offense? And that's something that I think got solved a bit tonight. And that, or today, it made me feel better to see them change things up because they did go four-man front as the game wore on and in the second half especially, and they were able to get some pressure. But I feel better knowing that maybe they can be more versatile on defense and maybe they can change it up. Albeit, I still think that they are going to be a four-man front team and a team that relies on, you know, those four guys to get pressure most of the time.
And they've gotten home in the four-man front this year. I mean, they were leading the nation in sacks. So it's I'm with you. I've liked the progress I've seen from Durante Jones. I still just also know that two of those games were McNeese and Central Michigan, and Central Michigan just looked awful. Their offensive attack was not what I thought it would be. So, look, I'll say this about two guys on defense. One had a great game, and I'm looking at the stat sheet here on the side. Let's see where Cordell finished at. Eight tackles, yeah, an interception, a forced fumble. He looked great in the nickel. You don't have to worry about sliding him outside because McLaughlin's back and playing opposite Eli Rick, so he gets to be in that nickel role. I think Flotts just had a great season. I mean, it can maybe be argued that he's been their best DB so far.
I was about to say that.
Let's see here. The team leader in tackles today, and I'll ask you this because you just got here and you don't have, like, a lot of the fans or at least people on our board is this predisposition that Damone Clark isn't good at football and shouldn't be out there. 15 tackles today. He's now led LSU in tackles every week. He is the middle linebacker, the starter, so you're often going to have the most tackles. But afterwards, Orgeron, without no one said, hey, did you think Damone Clark looked like an NFL linebacker? He just came out and said he made some NFL-level plays out there today, and that's how much he's grown his game. Are you seeing – does the Damone Clark you see out there right now match what you see, you know, on message boards and the radio of people who just don't even think he needs to be playing?
Coach O has been – the main supporter,
super high on him.
But yeah, the whole year, even the first two games where I thought he didn't play that well and nobody thought he played very well, he was just very high on Damone Clark. And I think the Central Michigan game, I've wrote about this a lot and everything I've basically wrote the past week, he looked really good in the Central Michigan game. And I thought that was a big step forward for this team, was that him and Michael Baskerville looked more comfortable. They were flying around in coverage. They looked better. And I think that's an area where this defense can continue to improve and continue to take steps forwards, along with safety, getting Jay Ward back, of course. But I think Damone Clark, the past two games, I don't have a lot of, you know, things to be mad at him about. I think he has been aggressive. He has hit the holes. He's filled his gaps. He's been smart. He's been in position. And that's really all I asked for. I know I'm not expecting him to go out there and be a star linebacker, an all SEC linebacker. I'm expecting him to be a quality player who is in position and a veteran at this point. So I was impressed. I liked it. I don't have too much bad things to say about Damone Clark.
Let it be on the record that Maddie B has come through with praise for Max Johnson, with praise for Damone Clark. This was a good football game then for LSU.
I know. I'm just leaving this game just raving about everybody on a 3-point win against Mississippi State, even though I just don't think Mississippi State is any good here.
But look here, I guess as we wrap up, I had one more thought. What was I about to say before I had to joke on you about that? What were we? I don't know. I was going somewhere with it, Maddie B.
All I was going to say is,
I know. The biggest question of the game was catch or not a catch for Jack Besh.
Oh, he tweeted this too. He tweeted this, man.
He wants a public opinion on it. Okay, we need to check out those results then.
So he definitely got it off the ground when the ball was the first thrown, right? He taps it up, and then it comes back on the other side, and this is where they couldn't get a clear angle of it to where when he gets the ball and it comes down, you know, does he lose it? Does it hit the ground and all this stuff? Does the defender punch it out? I don't think he caught it. I don't think he caught it. I don't think he had possession like as he was coming down and it like hit the ground. I think it hit
the
ground.
What's wild then is that you believe maybe that it never hit the ground the first time and that he actually had his fingers under that ball, popped it up to himself.
Yep.
And somehow made the snap.
Well, it can
because when you saw it live, it looked like Max had thrown it 4 yards short of him and then it like skipped into his body. And then he's getting up like, no, I caught it. Which is like, you know, your typical wide receiver move.
Yeah,
I caught it, no doubt. Review it.
I don't even have anything to like use as a prop. But like when the ball came down and like his hand was like on the ground, so it just naturally just popped back up, and then he came back and I think he lost. I think the defender kind of punched it out of his hands too. But Jack Besh, I think 2 receptions for 13 yards. I mean, I knew he wasn't gonna every
single
game.
Enough.
Yeah, I knew every game he wasn't gonna have like 5 receptions for 80 yards or whatever. But still. That's a guy who needs to get the ball in a lot more situations.
Yeah, three targets. That'd be on the low end of guys who were targeted in this game. So
that's crazy.
Like him and Jeray Jenkins had the same number of targets, which a week ago they were deciding they weren't even going to play Jeray Jenkins. So
Yeah, I don't know. It was good to see Armani Goodwin back too. Just to
kind of He's got some burst. He's got some burst to him. And we do know too that Corey Connor is fine after attempting the holy grail of running back moves. Spin move, stiff arm, hurdle, all in the same play. Unfortunately, it did not go well at the end for him. But they said he's fine after the game. I saw him tweeting after the game that
Corey, please,
they won and excited. But boy,
please, Corey, please, you don't have to hurdle people. I promise we'll think just the same of you if you don't try to hurdle people. The spin was fine. The stiff arm is cool. And then he out of balance too. He's right next to the side. It's not like
he has that was a thing
or anything.
Two people were already pushing him out of bounds, and he was going to just hurdle both of them.
And then he stays down. I'm like, Corey, please, geez, just get out of bounds, please. We need you. The run game is hurt enough as it is. Just stay healthy here. But yeah, I think that's all we got. Unless you have something else here.
Nah, I'm good. Yeah, like you said, hey, 3-point win. Go up to Starkville. You didn't have it, and that's the other thing. It's not a 3-point win, and it was 56-53. I mean, they played well on defense. They stuck to their game plan. You want to clean it up more in the fourth quarter. You know, you wish you would have put more points up, but they didn't run tempo. So it was one of those things where because they had a bunch of explosive plays and the rest of the time they couldn't sustain drives, you walk out with just 28 points. But, hey, today it's enough.
Yep, it was enough today. And not to look ahead, I don't want to look ahead, but, you know, UAB and Kentucky next two games, both teams who or at least Auburn struggling today, Kentucky struggling last week. We'll see how Kentucky does against South Carolina this coming week. So, you know, some room for optimism for LSU fans watching or listening to this podcast. If you are watching this podcast on YouTube, feel free to subscribe, leave a comment, leave a like, send it to a friend. We appreciate y'all's support on that platform as we continue to grow. And on the podcast side, Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcasts. Now also check us out on Twitter at MinGreen247. Our Twitter handles are right here. And yeah, thank you for joining us.
And that lets you know that Matthew is deep in North Texas because he just dropped a MinGreen247 as the handle without even realizing it.
Go 247. Also go 247. Yeah,
We've brought Matthew out of Denton, but we can't keep. He's not fully removed yet.
Yeah, my.
Don't worry. It was Billy doing this with SMU before, so we're all good.
There you go. No, I just have too many podcasts going on in my head right now. The start of the podcast, the end of the podcast, just all but everything good. In between is good. So that's all that matters.
There we go.
But thank y'all for joining us, and we'll talk to y'all later.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.